And I think that same year, the Yates Post Office was closed at Yates Center. And Lindenville had the Inasmuch King's Daughters Circle, the International Order of King's Daughters and Sons, and was dedicated to helping the poor. And it did a lot of good. Ella Kerwin, Mrs. Howard Berry, Mrs. Nellie Breed, Mrs. Charles Day, Mrs. Bert Thomas, and Martha Thomas were all members. Oh, they would have 50 members in it. And they would do things, and they would take things to the poor. Uh-huh. And, of course, 1908, they had a convention here, and the state president was here. And other agents have taken over that work, uh-huh. so that they finally had to disband. Mr. Frisbee sold his harness shop to Charles Connolly, and he remodeled it into a hotel, and he added the third story. William Warner from Port Jervis bought Fred Langdon's cooper shop and made barrels there for years. Frank Bunce sold his hardware business on Main Street, and Michael Cummings and Robert Smythe ran it for a long time.
Robert Smythe, that was Millard Smythe's father?
Yes. Uh-huh. And Michael Cummings was Emma Cummings' brother. She was a schoolteacher here for a number of years. The village, in 1979, tore down that hardware and built their new village hall on the property. And Roy L. Butterfield had been principal here from 1905 until 1910, when he went to Shalott, New York, as principal. And everybody liked Mr. Butterfield. He was the one we always spoke about.
And that would be the time that you were going to school.
Yes. Yes. I had gone into high school the year he left.
I see. Uh-huh. Well, all of the grades, the elementary grades and the high school, were all in the one building, weren't they?
Yes, yes.
The building that is now the elementary school on the east side of Main Street.
I think so, until uh-huh. the new school on the west side
yes,
was made.
Yes, yes.
And when the school previous to this one on the east side of Main Street burned, school was held in every place in the village that had a spare room.
Is that right?
The church, the opera house, the town building, everything.
Uh-huh.
And they
were you going to school at the time it burned?
Or
were
no,
you were
I was through.
School.
Mm-hmm. No, I was through. The Methodist women sponsored a flower carnival for years.
Oh, yes.
And people would come from all over. Regular home day, home week, or whatever. And people who had lived here enjoyed coming back.
Uh-huh.
After the carnivals, the school lecture course was held each winter. And then we had a wish for more education, so we got the Chautauqua tent to come, and that stayed for years. It was on Lake Avenue, back of the garden here, for a year or two, and then it went down on the plot back of the Methodist Church, and it was there as long as we had it mm-hmm. after that.
Well, that Chautauqua circuit really served a real purpose.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And Memorial Day services, back when I was a little girl, were the thing, like the 4th of July now.
Uh-huh.
The Grand Army of the Republic, GAR, soldiers would parade and everything.
We did in Medina, too.
Mm-hmm. In 1898, the Literary and Historical Club was formed by Ella Gray, Sarah Tuttle, Nell Breed, Celina Johnson, and Mrs. Uriel Timmerman. She was Livonia Freire, I think from Medina, I'm not sure. And they formed it for the reading of good books and keeping up with information on the times and the study of history. They were workers, I think, in the bean house or dry house or something, and they wanted to improve their minds.
Well, now, what was the bean house? You referred to it before.
Well, Mr. Barry would buy beans from the farmers, and they would bring them in. And they had to be sorted, the stones and the bad beans and things picked out,
and the
dirt pebbles and all. And they would work several weeks during the year. And then he would sell the beans.
For about 10 cents an hour, they worked.
I don't know. I've heard people say they'd get a dollar a day, so it probably was 10 cents an hour.
Yes, yeah.
It was not long before the literary club had a bigger membership. And then in a few years, they got up to 25, and they could hardly entertain in their own homes. So they had to limit it then. And it still is flourishing. I must have been 12 years old, or 14 maybe, when John Gray and Company, lumberyard, on North Main Street, north of the corner, on the west side, was purchased by Roy Tripp. He purchased the brick building, which had been used by Gray for maybe a foundry or something. And he remodeled it into two stores. He used the back part for his work, and he sold cutters and wagons and equipment things. And one part of the front was an ice cream parlor run by Edward Snowden of County Line. And upstairs, Joe Coppa had a shoe repair shop. And George Derby had a barber shop, and he did chair caning there. And Mr. Hatch had the bakery downstairs.
And that's where you got the cakes for 20 cents.
And after a time, S.W. Smith and Son, which was Charles Smith and his father, later was Charles Smith and his son Sherman, had an undertaking parlor there.
Is that where Millard Smythe learned the business?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Smith was an excellent undertaker, and Millard, I think, was just as good as Mr. Smith used to be. And John Gray continued his lumberyard in the buildings north of that. And between his planing mill and the creek was Norman Ecker's blacksmith shop, and I used to look in both sides of the street and see the blacksmiths shoeing horses when I'd go to school.
And a blacksmith shop smelled, ooh, didn't it?
I don't remember any smell to it,
don't
but
you?
Probably did.
Well,
those horseshoes would sizzle when they were dropped into cold water.
Well, I remember going in Cooperstown, going to the blacksmith shop there, you know, and it had a very peculiar smell.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose from the burning hoofs.
Probably.
When they put the hot shoe onto the horse's hoof.
And about 1910, a cannon was offered to the S. and P. Gilbert post of the Grand Army of the Republic that was here in Lindenville. And the village accepted it and placed it in the cemetery. That's where our cannon came from.
Oh.
Hudson, Leon Hudson, and Ralph Welch operated a greenhouse on Lake Avenue, down at the end of Lake Avenue.
That's the greenhouse where the Nichols were later?
Yes.
Yes, no longer in operation.
No longer. It has been torn down,
and it's
been leveled off and seeded, and it's a lovely lot.
Oh.
Robert B. Peters bought it.
I see.
And lived there and made it.
Uh-huh.
Took it down.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, Charles Sayre had a greenhouse up on Eagle Street behind his home. He
uh-huh.
could walk right out of his house into it. And it was the house right east of the telephone building, if you know where that is.
Uh-huh.
Robert Mucco did use the Hudson and Welch.
Yes.
And Thomas Sullivan was there before Robert. George M. Fish was a thrasher here, and he was also an excellent shot. He would go to all the shoots anywhere around. And he would get a score of 73 out of 80, beating two good professionals.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And the 50th anniversary of the reunion of the 28th Regiment, New York Volunteers of Niagara and Orleans Counties, was held 2 days in Alcott. John Cornwall was given a badge that day that said, 50th Anniversary, Alcott, New York, May 21st, 1911, 28th Regiment, New York Volunteers, 1st Brigade, 1st Division, 12th Corps, Army of the Potomac. Mr. Cornwall was there the second day, his 78th birthday. He lived on Eagle Street with Mr. and Mrs. Henry Breed. And no matter what time of day you would meet him, he always said good morning.
Uh-huh. It was always morning to him.
Yeah.
Maybe that's good philosophy.
I think myself I can say good morning easier than I can good afternoon.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I found that in 1911, Willis G. Housel, Charles E. Housel, Frank B. Housel, Albert Heiss, he was in Medina for a while.
Yes.
John Ward, Lee Wells, and George Resege met at the Housel Brothers Bank, that was the new bank building, and organized the Citizens State Bank.
Oh.
They'd been running as Brothers Bank for several years.
And you worked in that bank, did you not?
Yes.
How many years did you work there?
Well, I would say steadily about 40. I worked there 3 summers. Then I got the permanent job. And I worked there until 61. And I've been going back vacations and sick time ever since.
Is that right? You still go back and work in the bank?
Well, I was there 3 weeks in September.
Were you? Well, didn't you tell me the other day that there was a holdup at the bank one day?
Oh, yes.
Tell me about it now.
Oh, yes. On January 28th, 1924.
On my birthday.
Was it?
Yeah.
Harry Welch, Josie Gracie, and I were working at the bank. And Sidna Flat was a customer in the bank. When 3 men, heavily armed bandits, came in just about closing time. And they ordered us into the vault. Mr. George Prudham seemed to be the leader. And he rattled the doors to get in behind the counters. And Mrs. Gracie went to the door and let him in with her arms. She raised her arms, standing right there in the window. And someone across the street saw it and thought the bank was being held up. But nothing was done, sure enough. Mr. Prudham and Mr. Totman and a third, Mr. Crane, came in, and they had Mr. Welch go in the vault and open the safe where the money was. One of the men brought Mr. Flat and me into the back room. Of course, they all had guns. And I don't remember where Mrs. Gracie was, whether she was in the back room too. But anyway, Mr. Welch said, well, my keys are in my hip pocket. He didn't want to be shot putting his hands down. So he got his keys and gave the man the money. Fell around, gave the man the money, and they left. One man stayed in the car, headed south on the east side of Main Street, wrong way.
Uh-huh.
They went out and got in the car and went towards Medina. I understand they went to the Horan Road and switched cars. Then they went towards Buffalo. Well, of course, as the reason they couldn't shut us in the vault was because they had shut another door between.
Oh.
And it interfered with everything. And so we soon managed to get out and called Mr. Housel, who was in the Middle South for a vacation, being in January. And he said, anybody hurt? And we said, no. Mr. Welch said, no. Mr. Oakes was ill that day, so he was home. And we just went on from there. And in 2 weeks, those 3 men had been caught. It was a, they said, a $25,000 robbery. In the time of the robbery and the time the men were caught. George Prudham had been to the blind school in Batavia and married a blind girl, and he was caught while they were in their hotel in Buffalo.
Oh, the poor girl.
That's what I would think.
Were you awfully frightened when they came in?
Yes, I guess so. I'm sure.
Well, do you have anything more special that you want to tell me about?
Dining room in 1912. I was still in school down here.
Uh-huh.
And this necessitated raising the Sunday school room floor, because we would go in the south door up two steps, one step onto a platform and one step into the vestibule. Then we would go straight into the Sunday school room. And when we wanted to go into church, we would go up about four steps to a platform and then go through a door into the church. So the dining room, the league room, was built level with the church. So they wanted to make that a kitchen in place of a Sunday school room, and they had to raise the floor. And they did that. And the kitchen and dining room had been a little room upstairs over the Sunday school room. Then, of course, after they had a new kitchen, they used that for Sunday school rooms.
Uh-huh.
And that now is what they call the upper room.
Uh-huh.
Then later, I don't know what year, they enlarged the dining room, put on an extension at the back, and built a new kitchen.
Uh-huh.
So the former kitchen is now more or less a hall. The choir robes have a cupboard in it, and the refrigerators are in there, and the storage room for the tables,
mm-hmm.
things like that,
mm-hmm.
and a bookcase for the cupboard for the Sunday school materials. Recently, they built the education wing. Behind the pulpit, when the room was a Sunday school room, there were double doors, and for an overflow crowd, those doors were opened and people could see back of the pulpit,
mm-hmm.
and hear pretty well. Well, then when we got the pipe organ and put that in, it was put in that place. And of course, at that time, the floor was raised,
uh-huh.
had been raised. And the double doors were in the north side of the sanctuary and could be opened for the overflow into the dining room. Then, of course, when the front of the sanctuary was remodeled, we got an electric organ and took out the pipe organ, which the Lutherans at County Line, I believe, bought and installed.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Patterson designed the new front for our sanctuary.
Oh, did he?
Wrote several poems, one or two. have been set to music. Those old overalls of mine was one of them. In 1921, there was a play came here from out of town, and some of the kids decided that it was a rotten show. So a bunch of them, about 8 boys, got into a car. 3 of the boys stood on the running board, and they chased the troupe out of town and up South Lindenville Road, a little over a mile. They tried to pass, and the car skidded, and my brother saw that they were going to hit a telephone pole. So he jumped. He got a broken leg and a broken arm. The boy in front of him turned around to see where, what had happened to him, and he was killed.
Oh, dear.
And the boy at the back only got some cracked ribs. So that was a catastrophe.
Boys have always done dangerous pranks, haven't they?
Oh, I guess so. And really, we used to see rail fences. Mm-hmm. And we don't see them anymore.
Oh, no.
And stone fences are
That's
going
right.
out.
Well, you showed me last week when I was here an Indian peace pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that peace pipe, will you?
The stem of the pipe is probably 18 inches long. It's over 12, anyway. And the bowl of the pipe is made of pipestone clay. And that comes from, I believe, Minnesota. I'm not positive.
The clay does.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And no matter how much one tribe is enemy of another tribe, while they are gathering pipestone clay, they are peaceful. Never any fighting.
Oh.
But watch out when they get away. They're ready for fighting.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And my father got that about, well, 1888 or 1890, perhaps. He was in the army in Dakota.
Would that be Custer's army?
No, it was just the ordinary army of the United States.
Yes, but...
At the time, Sitting Bull was killed.
Yeah.
He was at Pier. And he also brought back home Indian War Club, which had a long, fairly long handle, perhaps 14 inches, and was all covered with beading. And the band that went around the stone of the hammer part was also beaded. And that stone was pointed at each end and was perhaps 8 inches from point to point.
And it's held to the handle by a thong, by a leather thong, is it?
No, there's a thong at the top end of the handle. It's held by a leather
band
that is beaded.
Uh-huh.
And the thong
at the top is supposed to be the scalp block.
Well, how did your father happen to get them?
I don't know. He joined the Army at Fort Niagara, and he was sent out to Dakota, and he was discharged from Fort Niagara. He was living at Newfane at the time, you see, and that's how he happened to join at Fort Niagara.
I see. Well, that's quite something to have.
And we also have a piece from the tower where Paul Revere's lanterns hung. My grandfather was visiting a friend in Boston, and they went to call on another friend who was a carpenter repairing the tower.
The Old North Church.
And that is how he got a piece of the tower.
And you have some lovely oil paintings here. Did you do those?
No, and I've always regretted that I didn't take lessons of my mother. She went here to school for a while, and then she went to Genesee Wesleyan Seminary in Lima, New York. And before she had gone there, she had done some painting. She was there in 1877 and 8. And while there, her mother wrote to her that they had hung her winter scene on the north wall of the living room.
And that's where it hangs right now.
That's right. And it's a large picture.
I would say it's about 30 by 20 inches.
I think it's a little larger than that.
A little larger than that. It's a beautiful scene. But you never have done any painting yourself.
No. I did a lot of drawing in school and after I got out of school. And I liked mechanical drawing. And Mother did show me some oil painting work. But she died when I was too young to decide what I wanted to do.
Have you ever considered going to the painting classes at the senior citizens?
Transportation.
Oh, yes.
I'm too far from them.
Yeah.
Then, Mother was also a musician. And she took music while she was in Lima. And while there, her mother wrote her that they had brought the melodeon out of the parlor and put it in the sitting room. Of course, we had three coal stoves.